possible? So the answer is Omar Rebbe Yuda Mativa Shel Shomer Zeh Beriyah Hi Mishesh Esim Ebreishes. It was created Mishesh Mebreishes V'Chevin Shoyu Marin Oisol Lavonim Hoyu Mispatchois Lefonov Kilvachin Shel Pinchas. And when they showed the lines on the stones where it should cut, they made a guide for this creature, and it cut them open like boards on a pinkos on a notebook. Okay, some type of, I'm not sure what that means exactly.
Levachin would seem to be the plural of
Ruach. A board.
Yeah.
So they made like a line, and it followed the line, and it split stones into boards. Stones which could not be used because they're too big. When they put a line, they gave the shomir a direction how to cut, it would cut the stone, and the stones can then be used like you would use pieces of wood, boards, but it's made from stone. The question is, Uboy bona shloma beis ha'olamim, this is what they used to build the beis mikdash. There's a machlokes in the Rishonim that the shomir was something that's supernatural, or is something which can be defined in the laws of science. So do we say there's some type of creature that the one thing Chazal tells us does not exist today? It went into Geniza. This creature is not to be found anywhere in the world today, just like we do not know where the Tachash is. We do not know the Tachash. This creature was multicolored skin, a hide, which was used to cover the Beis HaMikdash. They used the leftover hides to make shoes. This Tachash was Lefi Shah. Well, the Shamir was also Lefi Shah. But the Shamir has another question. Is it something that's supernatural? Something which cannot be understood according to the laws of science. It was a Dvar Ruchni, used to cut the Mizbeach. Or maybe the Shomer indeed is a real creature which has some type of a koyach that we are at loss to unexplained understand today. How can an insect have the koyach to cut through massive chunks of stone? So this is something which is a bit of a mystery. The Ein Kol Davar Yochel Lama Boy Afilu Nosun Al Gavi Aven Oy Lesech Tas Shol Mateches Miyad Hay Bakem Miyad. Didn't just cut stone; it cut metal as well. Mo Hay Oisin Loy Lahamida. What do they do? It's very interesting because scientifically, there are a lot of things. There are a lot of we know in chemical and science. There are certain things that can be used to cut stone, but what can cause stone to erode does not necessarily cause wood to erode. What could be used to cut wood does not necessarily work on stone. There's a certain chemical composition which only works in certain types of things. To have one item which does everything, can cut in science is something that's very weird. Buy glue in the store. Try to buy glue. So there are glues that are designated to bond metal. There are glues that are good for rubber. There are glues that are good for concrete. Even screws. You want to go buy a screw to go drill something into the wall. You don't buy this. The screw that you use to go into wood is not the screw you use to go drill something into concrete. Everything has its unique properties, and that's the way the world is. Everything is a specialty. To have an item that's so powerful that can cut a cut. You want to cut something, yeah?
Even now, they don't cut stone or metal with metal.
These diamonds. Diamonds, exactly. Diamonds.
They are mounted on metal. But
they're these diamonds. Exactly. And so the type of tools you use to cut one material in today's modern world are not the same tools and not the same things you use to cut other materials. The blade, the type of blade, the way it's serrated is not the same when you're cutting wood, when you're cutting stone. It's very different. This is a scientific fact. To say over here that you have a type of creature which can cut through anything is unheard of in science.
The contradiction is, how does the creature keep that stuff in its
exactly.
body?
Exactly. The whole thing doesn't make it. The whole thing is beyond our understanding.
Otherwise,
and to say it's scientific, it works scientifically, it's hard to swallow. If it's true, we believe it's true. But other sub-afarists, being that it's really so hard to understand this, it has to be that this was a creature that was a mystical creature that was beyond that, like the Mal of Derech HaTeva, and that's why it only existed in the time of Shlomo for the purpose of building the Beis HaMikdash, and it doesn't exist today.
Yeah, but you don't have to go that far. A parrot. Yeah. No creature has a voice box. A cat happens like a parrot. That's also that's against science.
I don't know what's against science.
How could a parrot talk?
It has like a human being. How could a human being talk? It mimics. It mimics this.
There's
something.
No creature that could talk.
Okay, this is a different topic. Okay, I understand.
Okay,
there are things today that are Mavral Harayon, That we don't. That when you look at it at first glance, it's impossible. And then when you study the science, it's possible. So maybe on the Hanani, the Shamir was a creature which scientifically had the ability to penetrate to all different types, but maybe not. We don't know. I think this is a machloikis among the Mepharshim of what was the status. Yeah.
Was the history of using metal to cut only for the Mizbeah?
Yes, only the Mizbeah.
So when it says he built the Beis
HaMikdash, Avne Gozis means cut stones.
So cut stones.
So
the entire
no, only the Mizbeah. Only the Mizbeah.
To build it, or couldn't have metal in it at all?
Couldn't have metal in it. That's a double pasuk. Mizbeah havonim tasali. Says in the pasuk, it has to be made from stone. Mizbeah havonim. But you need stones. How do you cut the stones? It should be precise. They cut stones. The stones they cut were not, it was not permitted. It's an issur deraisa to cut the stones that were used to make the Mizbeach with metal. So how then do you cut stones if you don't have metal?
Now you have laser.
That's where I was going.
So you want to say the Shomer is a laser?
No, but
who knows?
Today,
his middle name was laser.
If we needed to build a Mizbeach
that's a good
today
one.
For the Beis HaMikdash, we could use laser.
There was an article, right? So Mark showed me an article about I don't know if some Orthodox Jews did this. I have to go see what's going on, what the article says there. Whatever it is, they build, they've got a Mizbeach all ready to go. How many tons did they say it is? How many tons? Now, the truth is, it is a little bit strange, like, because I don't know the details, because the Gemara says, how did they build the Mizbeach? They used pebbles. They didn't even use big stones, so it seems they don't even need to cut stones. I don't know the answer. What it says, there's a prohibition to cut stones. It doesn't seem from the Mishnayos there was any need. When they built the Bayis Sheni, there was no Shomir. That's a given. So how did they build the Mizbeach? It says in the Mishnayos, they took pebbles and they took lime, sid, and they made a mold, and they poured into the mold pebbles, and then they poured lime and they smoothed it out and they let it dry. And then they built the next section. They put a frame, just exactly the way they make the sidewalks today. Same, you make a frame of wood, and you pour in cement. And what is cement? Sand. And some other chemicals which cause it to harden. That's all it is. So the Mizbeach was very similar to the way we make cement. Very similar. So there's no need to cut stones.
Why couldn't they do that then first?
It would seem that there was a hidur in using big stones. That's what appears. The Bayis Sheni, they had no choice. Because the Bayis Sheni, there was no Shomir. So the only way they could make it was by using teeny little stones with lime. It seems in the Bayis Rishon, the Mizbeach was made from big, full-size stones. And it was very little lime, if at all. And they just put the stones together to make a perfectly square Mizbeach with all of its characteristics of the Yesoi, the Soivev, and the Kronos. And maybe there was not any pebbles or lime. It was just pure stone. How do you put together a Mizbeach like this with perfect stone? You cut the stone. How do you cut the stone? You use the shomir. That's what it says. That's what it says here in Chazal. Let's go further. So now the question is: this shomir, it can cut through anything. How then do you store it in your toolkit? It'll go right through your toolkit. How do you store it? So there's a technique. They would wrap it in soft wool, tzemer, like tusks of tzemer wool. Lead. Lead is the ultimate, it's fascinating, lead. Lead is the metal that was used to contain the Yetzer Hara. And it's also the same material used to contain the Shomir. Kone shel oiferus, a tube of lead.
Okay? X-rays
do not go through lead. It's a fascinating metal. Lead. Lead is something in a world to itself. It's very dangerous. It's poisonous for a human being, right?
I think it's the heaviest material.
The heaviest material. It's interesting to study the properties of lead. Avar. Mole subin shel sodium. What do they do? They also, they put into this lead, it was an alloy, Subin, the pesoiles, the chaff of barley. Why barley? I don't know. Somehow barley and lead, they work together. I have no clue what this means. And look what it says. This concept is here in this past that we learned today. Who would ever imagine this amazing concept? Hadohi dichsev. It is referring to this, and the pasuk says Hamavlig Ashoid al os. He explains it in the brackets for us. Kolaymar Buya kalo kizo sheyecholu levakea har kosha milufanov. So the shomir is not telling us the story, which I thought was the story. It's telling us Hamavlig is referring to the shomir. The shomir here in the pasuk is called the shod. It's a weakling. It's a nothing. You can probably step on it and crush it, to crush it into smithereens, just by stepping upon it. The shoid al-oz, what's the oz? Is the stone. The shamir has the power to penetrate the mighty stone. And again, the only thing which can prevent it, but what is the shamir afraid of? The only thing that can prevent the shamir is a combination of really three things, it says.
Right.
Wool, lead, and barley. There must be some really good drush out there explaining the significance of these three things together is what contains the shamir from going out and destroying the world. If we really had it, we could have taken it and put it on the boundary of California and have it go a nice hike along the boundary of California, and California would just go out into the Pacific. And there'll only be 49 states in the United States. What?
Science predicts that eventually.
Anyway, it must be the Shamu is working very hard down there.
Very easily. Said eventually it'll just crack off.
Yeah, and we love
what, California?
California. Okay, so that's
been on the precipice for a while.
So this is the Shamir. Now, what is very fascinating is that lead, that the Shamir, which is used. To bring kapara to build a mizbeach for which we achieve kapara, is the same metal that is used to contain to hold the yetzer hara. Chazal tell us that at the time of the Bayis Sheni, the Anshei Knesses Hagadola made a decision that there should be no longer a yetzer hara for avodah zarah. You look at avodah zarah as the most bizarre thing. Why in the world would you want to bow down to a piece of wood or stone? What did they grab a stone? Was stone? What could destroy stone? The shamir can destroy the stone. What gives the stone its power that everyone loves the stone, worships and bows down to etzim v'avonim? It says there are two things: etzim v'avonim. It is the Yetzirah. What does the Yetzirah and the stone have in common? And the Shamir have in common? The one that has the natural ability to destroy the stone, and the one that has the ability to make the stone into an object of worship, the extreme opposite. What do both of these things have in common, the Yetzirah and the Shamir? In that both of them are frightened from lead, avar. Because avar is the item, is the metal which can hold them both back. The Gemara says, the Gemara Masechta Megillah says that in the time of the Bayis Sheni, the Gemara is a long story of what happened, how they captured it. They captured it and they put it in a tube of lead. Because the Yetzirah can penetrate anything. The Yetzirah is like Wi-Fi. It goes through walls and windows, wherever you are. Cell phone reception, the Yetzirah can get you anywhere, but cannot go through lead. And they took the Yetzirah, and they put the Yetzirah in a tube of avar. So isn't it amazing? These two creatures, the Shamir, it's a living creature, and the Yetzirah, it's a living creature. They are the two diametric opposites of stone. One of them makes us look at that stone as a god. And the other one can take that stone and to destroy it into nothing. Two opposites. And both of them have something in common. They're petrified of lead. Lead is the one thing which zeh le'uma zeh can take them both, and contain them both. So who's the king over here? Lead. Lead is an incredible shlita, incredible koyach in this world. Of of putting in control the koyach of bittul, the koyach to be mevatel avodah zara, and the koyach to create avodah zara.
Yetzirah is a creature.
Yeah, sure it is. It sure is. It says in Chazal.
It's a force.
It's an anthropomorph.
Whatever it is, but Chazal said that la'asalavo is going to, when Hashem will slaughter the Yetzirah.
Whatever that means.
There's going to be a hesped. There's going to be hespedim. There's going to be the whole class. It's going to be a big levaya. They're going to be big hespedim.
Tell him how great it is.
We don't know what this means. No, the Yetzirah. Everyone's going to cry. As Chazal say that one of the Amoraim, he went and he said that the Yetzirah is a tzaddik. It's mechav and l'shem shemayim. Mechav, everything that it does, hard to believe, huh? Destroy the whole world. Mechav and l'shem shemayim. When this Amoira, whoever he was, he said this, the Yetzirah came and he kissed him on his feet, and he says, "You, that's right. You appreciate me." And the whole world, well, they don't have good things to say, but you appreciate that's true. I'm a servant of Hashem, and I act l'shem shemayim. We have no clue. How could you say such a thing?
Just following orders?
Yeah.
Oh, that's a very dangerous thing. Following orders. We know what that means. Hoo-hoo. To say those words are very frightening. So, but that's exactly what the Gemara says about the Yetzihara. The Yetzihara maybe can say it, but a human being cannot say it. Okay? You got to be very, very careful what you say. Let's go further.
Yeah.
Okay, so we have over here a beautiful principle.
The architects were always wondering how they were able to put the stones in place. So apparently they found between layers of stones lead.
Wow.
What I think happened was that they were following a Roman technique of architecture where they would make rollers out of lead. And lead is very malleable. You can bend it easily. They put the rollers on, put the thing into place, and it just settled by itself and crushed the lead.
Wow! So it was like a cushion to like a putty to,
right.
That it should,
but like a mold.
Mold, and now what happens when the lead eroded?
It was compressed.
It was very compressed. It was already there. It was always there. Aha! Very, very fascinating. Very fascinating. All of the stones that we have today that we see in Yerushalayim are only from the Bayis Sheni. We don't have any record. The only stones that were cut with the Shamir with the Mizbeach. And those stones were put was the mizbeach, and the mizbeach from the Bayis Rishon, we don't know what happened to it. It's long gone. Okay, even the mizbeach of the Bayis Sheni, so that was put in Geniza. It was put in Geniza in the Beis Hamikdash itself. It always bothered me. Why did they have to put the stones of the Bayis Sheni, by the time the Chashmonaim, the Mechanical Miracle? They stored it in one of the big rooms in the Beis Hamikdash. Why? Why couldn't they take it out and put in Sheamus? You take it out to wherever there's a big land, the back of the Beis Hadeshen. There was dumping grounds outside of Yerushalayim. There were specially designated places where they took the ash, where they took Sheamus, they took all many, many things. They have to store the stones of the Mizbeach that were defiled by the Chashmonaim, by the Yevanim, in the Beis Hamikdash itself? Why? Why? Why can they take it out of the Geniza? So I'm just thinking out loud now. It's going
to
be totally...
Maybe you weren't allowed to take it out of the...
Why not? It was defiled. They had to demolish it and rebuild.
Okay.
So, and it takes up a lot of space.
You can make it taller, right?
These were worship. These were Avodah Zarah. It's a whole different. That's like all the Hanukkah. The Hanukkah miracle is, it has to be 100% pure. Even though maybe technically you can find all different reasons why you don't have to do anything. It's mechubal lekarka. So it's not mekabel tuma. Just because they offered sacrifices to an avodah zarah, it does not necessarily mean that it's defiled. It's not. It was not worshipped. And even if it was worshipped, anything that's mechubal lekarka does not become forbidden. So why was it necessary? The answer is it's still not in the spirit of the Beis Hamikdash. To use the Mizbeach that was used for Avodah Zarah, technically it's kosher, it's good, but it's not in the spirit of what the Beis Hamikdash is all about. And that's why Tumhot Rebetzibur. They didn't need oil for 8 days.
Right.
They could every day, they're allowed to light their Tanaim, so there's a halacha Tumhot Rebetzibur. When you rededicate the Beis Hamikdash, it has to be perfect. has to be tahar. The Mizbeach has to be fresh, has to have never been used for an Avera. The Shemen has to be tahar. That's all what Chanukah is about. But why was it necessary to take the stones of the Mizbeach and put them in store them in Geniza in the Beis HaMikdash itself? Yeah?
Oh, well, in Geniza, I can understand, because there are other objects that were put away, hidden away, for fear that they might be
worshipped.
Objects of worship.
Okay, that's an idea. So you suggest that they would put it, they would take it out to the dumping ground, to a landfill. Someone would eventually come there and steal them and worship them, because this was once used for pagan services.
Right.
Or maybe we can say it was a constant reminder. Every time someone came into the Beis HaMikdash, they have tours, right? They probably had tours of the Beis HaMikdash. This is the chamber of the old Mizbeach that was demolished. It was a constant visual reminder of the miracle of Chanukah. Don't go back to your old ways. I'm thinking now out loud. This is Rabbi Mayevsky's expression. I'm plagiarizing his expression.
It's a Mishnah.
So I'm thinking out loud now, and I'm thinking that maybe, who knows, this Mizbeach that they demolished, when was it built? I don't know for sure how often they rebuilt them. They refurbished the Mizbeach. They rebuilt it. But maybe this Mizbeach was built in the beginning of the Bayis Sheni. The Bayis Sheni was rebuilt approximately 70 years after the Churban Bayis Rishon. Maybe, I don't know, they still had at that time, in the beginning of the Bayis Sheni, the Shomir worm. If they were still Nevi'im, Chagai, Zechariah, Malachi, Ezra, and Nehemiah, they were very holy people who are in Tanakh. Maybe they at that time they destroyed, they put in Geniza, the Yetzirah. It's very possible they still had access to the Shomir worm. And the Shomir worm was used to cut these stones. Could you imagine what these stones would be worth to people to analyze them? How in the world was this stone cut? It was not cut in a natural way. It was cut in a supernatural way with a worm that doesn't exist. The Gemara is the Farish. It's not to be found today. Whether you want to take the approach that it was scientific, it was some type of mitzius, or whether you want to take the approach that it was a mystical creature that cut the stone, could you imagine if I would show you a stone today and I would say this stone was cut in a method that does not exist on the face of this earth today? You would take this and it would be priceless. It would be a source of avodah zarah. It would be who knows what.
You mean the shomer?
The shomer doesn't exist. But the stones that were cut by the shomer, may the mizbeach that was defiled by the yavanim may have been the mizbeach that was built 200 years before at the beginning of the Bayis Sheni. If they were Nevi'im, and so maybe the Shomer still was around. If they were able at that time to put the Yetzirah in a capture and put in a lead tube, so maybe at that point they also had access to the Shomer. And if that's the case, wow, I can show you, put in my hands a stone that was cut by the Shomer. It's like the Luchos. The Haluchos, Ma'asei Elokim Hema. The Luchos was a creation of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This is something which would be an incredible, incredible thing, and it was a very great danger that it should be released to society. It should be put in a landfill. People will be digging it up,
yeah.
And you can only can imagine what would happen. A whole World War III would break out over fighting over it. Yeah.
I was just thinking about that. The only time when the Shamir was used, could be used, was when the nation of Israel was supreme over
their enemies,
the entire world, because then it could be possessed securely. Now we wouldn't have that option because of what you just said. Everybody would be after it. So
exactly.
it's only in Mashiach times.
We'll come back.
That it possibly could be used again,
restored. So there are many mysteries about this Shamir. And the thing is, the Mishnayis and Masechta and Midos make it very clear that there was no need to cut stone altogether, because they just used pebbles and lime and made a mold. That the Mishnayis are recording what took place during the Bayis Sheni. And obviously it's recording the end of the Bayis Sheni, when they built the Mizbech Ozek, Mor B'Shemesh, Chanukas, and the Tam of the Chashmonoim, and onward, when there was certainly no Shomir worm. But what about the Bayis Rishon, when there certainly was the Shomir? That's not then, then when? Because the Moshe's Mizbech was not made from stone. Moshe's Mizbech was made from earth. Mizbech Adama was a different type of Mizbech. So there was only the Shon, was only the Bayis Rishon. Okay, so that, we don't really know how they built that Mizbech, and it seems they did not use lime and pebbles. They used full stones to make the Mizbech. The dimensions, there was a little bit different. It was 28 amos by 28 amos on the bottom. It got smaller as it went up, not like the Bayis Sheni when it was 32 by 32. But it was l'chayra, we assume it was made from full stones cut with the shamir. What happened to that Mizbeach? Gone, we have no clue. That's gone, mama, that, who knows where it is, where those stones are. Bayis Sheni, you cannot ignore the fact that it's a very difficult question as to why it was necessary to put the Mizbeach, the old Mizbeach in Geniza, in the Beis HaMikdash itself, in its own separate chamber. It's a tough question. And you look at all these different types of answers. But maybe, to review, maybe it's because of the Shamir. The Shamir is, it cut those stones. And a stone that was cut by a creature that does not exist today would be a fascinating thing to study and to analyze the edges of it, to try to understand how it was cut in such a fashion. And maybe for that reason it had to be protected. And we're better to protect the stones in the Beis HaMikdash. Both of these items are the stone, the Shamir and the Yetzer Hara. There must be a connection between the two. Can only be contained in lead. To be a bit more precise, here it says really three ingredients together: lead, tufts of wool, and the pesoiles of barley. There got to be someone out there that tells us what the connection of these three things are, and how it connects to the Yetzer Hara. And we cannot ignore the fact that the primary form of idolatry, they worship stone. Avraham Avinu, we find that stone idols, and a shomer destroys stone. And it's the Yetzer Hara which makes men crazy to think that this stone has some crazy power, has some power in this world. Okay, that's what we learned about the Shamir today. Now let's go to another sugya. Now we go to another. We go now to Shmuel. It's right in the middle, the beginning of the line, right in the middle on page 318. The next Maamar Chazal, Shmuel Hoya Memache Bitzva Hamelchama. Shmuel was Memache. Now what does it mean here, Memache? He was. I don't know what does it mean.
Does it mean to protest?
I'm not sure. Let's read a few more few words. Let's go a few words further. So what the things that the Gemara is explaining? What would the people do before they would go out to war? Wars in ancient times, this is clear as day. When you read ancient history, is every war was like almost it was a religious war. Before you go out to war, you pray to your God.
At least in our side.
And, well, no, on their side even more. I think on their side even more. They pray to their God and they have symbols. They go out to war, they carry this symbol of their God. Look, the Christians, the Crusaders. What does it mean to be a Crusader? It means to take the cross.
That's obviously a later war, but
Yeah, but it certainly parallels the ancient war. A Crusader literally means to take hold of the cross.
Yes.
And all the depictions of the wars of the Crusaders, you see someone, a soldier standing there, holding in his hand the cross.
A banner,
you hold it. It's like somehow that's going to be their salvation. Holding the Avodah Zarah is their salvation. So unfortunately, people, Jews, they got swept away in this ideology. They also took symbols of Avodah Zarah. They worshipped gods, and then they went to war, and they failed. They said, "Lama nigaf nihayim? Why did we lose?" You tell them, "Atem, you know why? is because you're angering Hashem by worshiping gods before you go out. You think your salvation will come from these gods.
Right.
The sword floods. Okay, it's a unique expression. The sword causes the blood to flow like a stream. Only because of the wicked. If you want to be the wicked, you're going to be the victims. Yesh lachem lulmay me'avaseichem, follow the ways of your forefathers. Shiyat shiyatsu shnei masu elef utzvitzavu al midyan v'lo nergu mehen echad. Moshe Rabbeinu, he went to war. He told Yahushua, we're only going to go out with 12,000 people. I think there's a medrash that says that they really wanted to take out to war many, many more. They wanted to go out to war with an enormous number of people to shock and awe, to overwhelm the enemy. And Hashem said, no, if you're going to go out with too many soldiers, then it's going to be, no one's going to attribute the success to Hashem. They're going to say, Koichi the Oitzem Yadi Osli Sachayel Hazeh, and therefore I want you to go fight the war with a number of people that's Daldin Derech HaTeva. You will not succeed. You will not succeed. The only way you can succeed is through the siyas diat the shmaya. The imtaimru she'eatem muad. You're going to argue with me that 12,000 is not enough soldiers to conquer the mighty army of Midian. The haloya hakadosh baruch hu migabel amuatim v'al hamerubim. Hakadosh baruch hu is the one that has success. Hamavlig shoyd alaz. Hashem lets the show the weak to prevail upon the mighty. So again, we have another example over here. Another example of where the navi Amos is entering into the world of prophecy. In the world of prophecy, there's no difference between the past, the present, and the future. It's all integrated. And this pasuk is basically part of the dialogue between Moshe and Yahushua. Moshe says to Yahushua, gather 12,000 people. Yahushua says to Moshe, the Department of Defense has made an analysis that says 12,000 just will not do it. Their professional analysis of the Pentagon is, we need at least 100,000 soldiers, boots on the ground, to succeed. And Moshe says, what do you think this is? You think it's America? This is Melchemes Hashem. Melchemes Hashem. It's Hashem that brings success. And Hashem and Moshe said to Yahushua these words. This is a quotation from Moshe Rabbeinu. 2,500 years later, because you go into the world of prophecy, you see the whole world, you see the past. Now, okay, same thing. This is another Maamar Chazal, the Mishnas Rebbe Eliezer. Okay, this is not Pirkei Avos, right? That's different Pirkei. Probably the most famous Medrash is Pirkei, right? Pirkei Rebbe Eliezer. It's quoted like right and left wherever you turn.
That's really my favorite.
Even more than Medrash Rabbah. Even more than Medrash Rabbah. Medrash Rabbah is the basics. That's like the aleph, the bread and butter. But yet, when you see Sefarim quoting Medrash, their favorite point of reference is Pirkei de Rebbe Eliezer.
It's remarkable, really.
That's like choice.
It's a little more rational than Medrash, though.
No, Medrash Rabbah?
No. Medrash Rabbah is more spiritual than Pirkei de Rebbe Eliezer. That has a little more understandable in terms of reality.
You get more, especially with the proportion, you get more backstory.
Yeah, really.
So this is something else. I've never heard of this. It's called Mishnas Rebbe Eliezer. Okay, whatever this is. A lot of Midrashim. The Mishnas. Oz refers to...
I think it's called Yud Gimel Midrash Rebbe Eliezer.
Mishnas
could be wrong.
So Shoyd are the weak people, the Oz are the mighty people, like Hashem Baruch Hu Nois Leilu Nitzachin Al Elu, like we learned many times already, Loyod Elashu Ma'ablan Keheref Ayin. So here he is, a new dimension into this pasuk. And that is, not only is it Giboirin Biyat Chaloshim, that's what we say in Chanukah, this pasuk is teaching you something more different. He adds in Keheref Ayin. What does Heref Ayin literally mean?
Of an eye.
The blink of an eye. Herif means, I don't know, I'm not even sure if that's, we translate the blink of an eye.
Well, herif memeni v'ashmidei,
distance yourself.
One,
distance. I don't know, there's something very curious about herif. What is the exact, precise translation of the words herif ayin? There has to be something. This doesn't mean blink. You blink? Is that what it means? That's what heref means. Heref means distance. Heref mimeni. Leave me alone. Get out of here. Get out of here. Va'ash midev, and I will destroy them. Hashem said to Moshe Rabbeinu, heref mimeni. Distance yourself from me. Oh, so that's the question.
That's why I'm asking the question. Understood as time, as an instant.
So that's the question. Why do we translate in common colloquial translation of the expression "heref eye" means the blink of an eye. Where do you get that translation from? What is the literal translation of the word "heref"? You have to go to Chumash, and Chumash heref means distance. Get out of here. Remove yourself from me. Do not badger me.
By closing your eye, blinking.
Heref mimeni.
You don't see the thing anymore. It's distance.
So you want to make the connection. And Hashem is saying, I don't want you to be in front of me. I want you to be away from me, and I will destroy them. But it does not imply time. It just means distance. Let's leave it something to think about. Shenemar hamavlik shoyd alos. Now, he's saying a lot here, and I don't know how to connect the dots. I really don't know what he means over here. I have to study this more. But he's adding here this Mishnas Rebbe Eliezer, a new dimension into the principle of Giboirim Biyad Chaloshim. On Chanukah, we only have what's called Giboirim Biyad Chaloshim. In this Pasuk, it's more than that. It's Giboirim Biyad Chaloshim in an instant. The war of Chanukah, by the way, Chanukah miracle was not the end of the war. The wars went on for another 25
right.
years.
Yeah.
And everyone died.
Yeah.
He had how many sons? Five sons. And after this, there was another war, and he lost another son. And then another son. And another son. And the only one to survive was Shimon. Shimon was the only surviving child of Matisyahu. And he declared himself to be the king of the Hashmonaim of this new dynasty, and he became the king until almost the Churban, until they didn't give it up. So Matisyahu had five sons, Ogibarim, Yehuda. I don't remember all their names. The last one was Shimon. Miracle of Chanukah was basically the middle of the war. It's when the tide changed. That's really what we celebrate Chanukah. We don't celebrate the complete victory. The victory didn't happen. It was a battle. It was a critical battle that changed the momentum of the Yevanim. It was now, the tide has changed. Klal Yisrael were dominant. But there was a lot of work to do. And there was a lot of blood that would still be spilled until victory was 100%. And that took 25 more years. Mm. 25 more years. So when we talk about Giborim Biyat Chaloshim, there is a lot of pain that is in Giborim Biyat Chaloshim.
What? That's what it was. They fought to a standstill.
And now the tide changed.
Right.
But when that all of that captures is, okay, very good. Giborim Biyat Chaloshim. And what was the price? And what price did you pay for this? You paid with blood. There were wars, and people died. Not only did ordinary soldiers die, the generals died. Four of the five children of Matisyahu died. They were killed in war. So, and how big was their army? Their army was a joke compared to the army of the Yevanim.
It was a guerrilla force.
Whatever, but it was a joke compared to their army. So it's a miracle. A miracle of Giboirim Biyat Chaloshim. But you know, there was a price to pay. And not only was there a price to pay, this didn't happen in a moment. It took years. There was 25 more years after, and how long were they fighting until the Chanukah miracle happened? It didn't happen right away. There was 52 years of Shmad. They were already, the Yevanim were already dominant for over 100 years. Okay, Asar B'Teves, coming up on Tuesday, takes us back to the beginning of the dynasty of the Yevanim. It was 100. What is Asar B'Teves? One of the things about Asar B'Teves, I take it back. I'm talking about the eighth day of Teves. What happened on the eighth day of Teves? I'm sorry, confusing the three there. We're coming now to 3 days of fasting. The 8th, the 9th, and the 10th.
How many melech they translated to?
What happened on the 10th day of Teves? Yerushalayim, they laid the Yerushalayim, the wall, they laid siege to the walls of Yerushalayim. In the Bayis Rishon, the siege began. The walls were breached 2.5 years later on Shiva Asar B'Tammuz. They held out for 2.5 years, and when did the Churban begin? It began 2.5 years earlier on Asara B'Teves. That's why we fast on the 10th day of Teves. You also, it says in Shulchan Aruch that you're supposed to fast on Sunday. This Sunday is a fast day. What happened on Sunday? Talmai HaMelech, he was a Greek king. Greek. The same.
But he lived in Egypt.
He was partners. I don't know the Pratim, but he was partners with the Yavanim. He was part of the dynasty of the Yavanim, of the Greeks. And what did they do? This event took place 100 years before the Hanukkah miracle. 100 years, approximately. We'll go maybe on Monday all the details. Over 100 years before, they took the 70 Chachamim, they locked them in a room, and they told them to translate the Torah in 70 different rooms. 70 different rooms, and told them to provide an art scroll translation of the Torah. Well, some will tell you it was a Bromberg translation. Some will tell you that it was a Sincere translation. But whatever it was, each one provided a translation. And it was exactly the same. And darkness descended upon the world for 3 days. It was a terrible defilement of the sanctity of the Torah when it became accessible to the entire world to do what they want with it and to manipulate it and to distort it. Until this point in time, the world did not even know what it said in the Torah. And that was a very great benefit for us. Mind your own business. And now when they had access to the Torah, when it said in the Torah, the whole world, it became something which they used against us. It's one mahalich. And therefore, darkness came down upon the world for 3 days. That's how he used us to fast on when? On Sunday. Why do we fast on Monday? So what does it say in the Shulchan Aruch? The reason is not known. That's what it says in the words of the Beis Yosef. The reason is not known. And many, many people have come along, as you can only imagine. Maybe you don't know the reason, but I'll tell you what the reason is. And they give a whole list of reasons. Ezra Nechemya, it's their yard site. Some say that was the day when Christianity, there was a Tana who, L'shem Shemayim, separated the traditional Jews against, took out of the closet worshippers of Yeshu HaNotri. Today he removed them. In his honor, we observe his yard site. Okay, there's a lot of Torah. Exactly what big mystery as to what happened on the 9th day of Teves. But it says in Shulchan Aruch that it's a day of fasting, and therefore we have this Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, 3 days of fasting to break away from all those donuts from Chanukah. Okay, 3 days of fasting. No one fast today. You never heard of anyone fasting on the 8th and the 9th. Niskatnu Hadoiros. You're lucky if you fast on the 10th day, but no one fasts today on the 8th and 9th day. Now that was the Yavanim 100 years before the miracle of Chanukah. Chanukah 100 years later. But so the Yavanim were chepping. They were causing us pain and suffering for a very long time. And when it says here, the Giboirim Biyat Chaloshim, it wasn't an instantaneous victory. Along comes this Chazal and tells us something fascinating. There's another type of Giboirim Biyat Chaloshim. And that's wrapped up in the term Hamavlig. Hamavlig has the connotation to overwhelm. In an instant, one moment, that's a whole new league. That type is a different league which we were not zeichet to in the time of Chanukah. And here, Amos is telling us that Klal Yisrael, you're going to suffer this. You're going to suffer this, if you continue in your evil ways. You may be Giboirin, you may be almighty and powerful, have the best weapons, ammunition, and sophistication, but if you don't do the Ratzon Hashem, Rachman al-Litzlan, Hashem will cause the Shod, the weak, feeble creatures of this world, to prevail upon you mighty, powerful people in an instant. Heref, in an instant, Herefayin. So it's a frightening, it's a whole new, this Mishnah Shabileza adds this incredible new dimension to Fataych, to explain what it means to Amadlik Shoid al Os.
The difference between Herif, the expression is not Herifying, it's Kiherifying.
Kiherif, but it's a Chav is a Chav
Adimyoin.
But it's still like a Herif. But like a Herif.
By closing your eye and you don't
Herif mimeni v'ashmidein.
That means that, but when we say it about Herifying, it means Kiherif.
But how is it connected to Herif? There has to be some type of connection. I don't know. Look, we know the Chazal said that HaKadosh Baruch Hu's anger is in the split second.
Right.
Bilam, he cursed Klal Yisrael for 1 second. So therefore, when Hashem says to Moshe, you know, take a break, Moshe Rabbeinu, and when you take a break, I'm going to do my thing. How long does it take for Hashem to do his thing? It takes him, Kalim, a split second. So Memela Heref means the amount of time you're going to distance is going to be for a split second. So that's maybe why we say Keherifayin, means just like we find back on this rock, he only needed a split second, kalein. So too, when you want to say to a person, just give me a herifayin, it means a split second. It means that amount of time. Okay, so that concludes the good. These are mamish, these mamari chazal are unbelievable. They're fascinating. We really owe art school a very big yashul kaya for putting them on the page for us, and even giving us a translation of some of these words. And each one opens up a whole new dimension to pshat and this pasuk. How could we have done this without art school? Now we have maybe just we have to do. We have to do some mincha gedolah, but it's a bit late, so we're going to leave that mission for tomorrow.